of these letters have you gotten? We are writing to notify you of a data security incident that may have involved your personal information. We take the protection of your personal information very seriously, blah, 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 whatever. They all sound the same. And if you take that protection so seriously, why the heck didn't you actually protect it? Arrgh! Sorry, I feel better now. These are familiar because they're common, and they're common because the foundation of nearly all our financial and related systems is pegged to a single 9-digit number that was meant to help give all Americans a sense of, dare we say, security in times of need, and has unintentionally put much of our information and our identities at risk. A document that changed the world, a card bearing the number 055-09-0001, issued by the U.S. Social Security Administration in Baltimore, 1936. I'm Joe James of the University of Washington Information School. You know the number I mean. The one you've probably committed to memory but dare not tell anyone, though you secretly suspect, probably rightly, is easily available and for sale on some dark and spooky corner of the internet. Your Social Security number is, well, the number of your Social Security account, which tracks your income over your lifetime and admits you to benefits upon retirement, disability, or the death of a spouse. The program was initiated in 1936 as part of the New Deal package of programs spun up in the wake of the Great Depression to form part of a social safety net and provide financial support for people in those difficult circumstances. At the time, it would have seemed obvious enough to assign each participant a unique number for use in keeping their individual records and accounts straight, how much they had earned and what benefits they were entitled to. In that way, it's like any account number for a bank or a credit card or whatever. In the earliest days, as the new agency lacked infrastructure, they turned to another government agency that had the broadest imaginable reach, the Post Office, now the Postal Service. In November of 1936, just days after the federal election, application forms were sent to millions of Americans via their employers and then began to arrive at about 1,000 post offices, which had been designated to assign numbers and then type and send cards to individuals. There was no actual first card for a first person because many thousands were issued on that first day, over 25 million within the first 3 months. The symbolic first number, though, was assigned on December 1st, the same day the abdication crisis of Edward VIII became public and that membership in the Hitler Youth was made mandatory, to one Mr. John D. Sweeney, Jr., a 23-year-old shipping clerk working for his family's factory in New Rochelle, New York, so he could learn the business. The Social Security website rather pointedly tells us that the family was wealthy, lived in a 15-room house staffed with servants, and were Republicans who voted against Roosevelt in 36. Despite these shortcomings, when Mr. Sweeney died in 1974, even though he had never received benefits, his widow did until her death 8 years later. Sweeney got to be first because his card got picked up by an administrator, one Joe Fay, off the initial pile to be formalized in the then headquarters of Social Security in the Candler Building in Baltimore, no doubt with a flourish, and thus Sweeney got his allocated 15 minutes of fame. His number was 055-09-0001. The lowest number, 001-01-0001, went to Grace Owen of Concord, New Hampshire. Note, there isn't a 000-00-0001. For several decades, the three components of the number had a defined structure. The first three digits represented the geographical area of the issuing office, the middle two were group numbers, and the last four a serial number assigned in order of processing. If that all sounds, shall we say, predictable, you're right. With a bit of detecting, it isn't impossible to figure out what a particular person's SSN might be. In 2011, the Social Security Administration began randomizing number assignment, which is small comfort to those of us old enough to remember the 20th century. It could all have been different. Alternate schemes were considered, including various combination of letters and numbers, which were nixed because that would have required buying new computing machines to handle and print the letters. Now, as we all know, it's no longer just a Social Security number. It still is, and the annual statement I get showing my predicted benefits when I retire, please God, provide a bit of comfort every year. That comfort is offset by the unrest we all feel at just how many aspects of our lives are now intertwined with those 9 digits. Try and get a job without one, or a credit card, or a bank account, or a loan, or a mortgage, or almost anything else financial. Cards that were issued from 1946 to 1972 explicitly said not to use the number for identification, but it happened anyway, including for the military, federal employees, Medicare, the VA, food stamps, school lunches, and on and on and on, essentially out of need and expediency and slow creep. My students are horrified when I tell them that my student number while I was in college in the 80s was my Social Security number, and I would cheerfully recite it out loud in offices, write it on every official form I used, or goodness knows where else, without giving it a second thought. Today, this is laughable, bordering on the psychotic. The prospect of identity theft, if your SSN was compromised, is awful to contemplate, and entire secondary businesses have arisen to provide a measure of protection and recovery when it happens. Some famously humorous examples emerge from advertising. In the late 30s, a wallet maker included reproductions of their vice president's secretary's card to show how easily it would fit in the wallet. And something like 40,000 people tried to claim it over 40 years. And it's just too delicious that the co-founder of LifeLock publicized his number on billboards, leading to at least a dozen identity thefts and a $12 million penalty from the FTC for false advertising. One problem you don't have to worry about, not that it was likely uppermost in your mind, is your number being used after your death. The Social Security Administration tries its darndest to know when everybody dies, to put it bluntly, though in the highly distributed American way we have of doing just about everything, there's no single integrated method to do that. They get data from hospitals, banks, and other financial institutions, funeral homes, governments, and just plain folks who call in and tell them that Aunt Sadie has gone to a better place. They do a pretty creditable job, typically averaging something well over 90% coverage every year. And when a death is recorded, the administration then puts that number into what is known as, cue the ominous chord, the Death Master File, now containing over 100 million records. This effectively cancels the number so that it can't be used, primarily to collect benefits, but also for anything else. This file is publicly available for a small fee and updated weekly. All of which is great, unless you're one of the unfortunate people who have somehow gotten mistakenly reported as dead, maybe because of identical names or just a simple clerical error of entering the wrong number, transposing digits, you get the idea. Then you wind up as what's known as a credit zombie, who is a real-life person, honestly, but Social Security thinks you're dead, and now it's your job to prove you're not dead, because your bank thinks you're dead, and so does your credit card company, and maybe your employer, or landlord, or mortgage lender, or Medicare, and you might as well be dead. It's hard to nail down just how frequent this is. Somewhere around 10,000 people a year? Enough that Social Security has a webpage with instructions on what personal documents, originals only, you can bring to their office to be declared undead, not dead, so to speak. They say, when we correct your record, we will offer you a letter that you can give to banks, doctors, or others to show that your death report was in error. Gee, thanks. This letter is charmingly called the Erroneous Death Case Third Party Contact Notice, which the happy recipients often have to carry around with them all the time. For decades, most people didn't get a card until their teens, since it was only needed for employment. Tax law changes now mandate including numbers for dependent children, so it's now common for infants to be assigned numbers at birth, often along with their birth certificates. Yes, it's gone a long way beyond its original purpose and mandate. Yes, it's subject to all kinds of problems and issues. Yes, yours has likely been bought and sold a bunch of times. Yes, yes, yes. And there's gotta be a number. Imagine for a moment that there wasn't an effective, unique identifier for all these kinds of uses and contexts. You'd need a whole range of identifiers, each for their own purpose, which sounds an awful lot like every website and service you sign up for. And if you think your password management regime is a nightmare now, in the absence of a multipurpose fundamental ID number, it'd be that much worse. It's hard to imagine that no version of a federal assistance program would have been developed. And if it did, then there would need to be something very much like a social security number, maybe more carefully designed for multiple purposes, which would have wound up as a national ID number anyway, which many countries have implemented but feels entirely unpalatable to Americans. So there. Now imagine you don't have a number at all, free from all the concerns we've discussed, and also cut off from so many aspects of everyday life. Employment, education, banking, credit, travel, even driving. The word undocumented is easily tossed around, but in this society, no document, no number, no access, no thank you, and a life lived almost entirely in the shadows. That's a different kind of insecurity and a trade-off I think very few people would willingly make.